From the campus of Stanford University, this is Schools In.
They believe that what we're being told is everything they need to know, and they just pay attention to that.
You actually have to teach the teachers how to teach for innovation.
With your hosts, Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.
Welcome to Schools In. I'm Denise Pope, Senior Lecturer with the Graduate School of Education here at Stanford, with my co-host, Dean Dan Schwartz, Dean of the Graduate School of Education.
Yes, and I am here with my technologically savvy tweeting, twittering, website blogging co-host, Dr. Denise Pope.
Seriously, I do not have Twitter. I don't tweet. I don't retweet. Is that bad to admit in today's day and age?
How much time do you spend on Facebook?
Some.
Well, what, you're waiting to be a grandparent?
Yeah, then it'll be really useful. Yeah, I'm too busy for some of this stuff.
Aww. I know. We're going to talk with Antero Garcia, who's an expert in technology in the classroom. But I kind of want to start with this story that happened to me, and I've always been trying to develop an interpretation of this. So before I went to college, I taught in Kenya. I did it so I could go mountaineering in Uganda, actually. And so this is a little bit of a shaggy dog story, but let me get to it. So, you know, I'm sort of the only white guy for 100 miles.
Wow.
And I'm kind of an honored guest as a teacher. And the head of the village invites me to his house for dinner. And he puts me in the ante room, which has been recently whitewashed and the floor has been swept out. And there's a stool, and on the stool is a radio. And the radio's on full. And I stay there for 20 minutes, and the radio is playing nothing but static.
Whoa.
Nothing but static. And then he walks in and he says, "What do you think?" So what's going on here?
What do you think? Wow. I would have said to him at the time, I think you don't get reception out here.
I should have said that.
No. I'm just kidding.
You ignorant fool.
Why are we listening to static? No. What do you think? Was it supposed to get you kind of in a meditative mode? I don't know, Dan.
I don't know. But here's my theory, is that the technology represented the future for him. And he knew it was coming, and he wanted to show that he is prepared for the technology of the future and how it's going to change their lives, and that his community is going to be part of this revolution.
So,
and you see this in schools, right? Schools will buy lots of technology without sort of an intended use particularly, except people use it. But I think it's symbolic. It's saying we are of the future, even if we don't know how to do it now.
Well, okay, so this is a true story from when I first started teaching. So this was many, many years ago. This was probably 30 years ago. I taught at a school that was called itself very progressive because they had, exactly as you said, bought a whole class set of computers. iPads didn't exist back then. And they were still in boxes by the end of my first year. We were not even allowed to go and take them out of the boxes because they needed the approval from the district. From somebody at the district had to come and set up the computer. So even though there were some of us who probably could do it, not me, but I was really hoping to do it for teaching my kids writing. And the entire year, these beautiful new computers sat in boxes in what was then going to be called the computer room, and it had nothing in
it. So when the parents came in, did you say, "See how we're state of the art? You see all the computers we have here?"
Isn't that the craziest thing? It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
I don't think it's atypical. I do think technology is a powerful symbol of progress, and so you want it there even if you don't know what to do with it. So I'd like to introduce Antero Garcia. He is an assistant professor in the Stanford Graduate School of Education. He also has a new book coming out on how to incorporate technology, largely around mobile phones. And it has the best title ever, called Good Reception.
Yeah, they needed that in Kenya.
That was very quick.
Thank you.
So welcome, Antero.
Hi, thanks. Guessing the part after a good reception. It's they needed that in Kenya.
That's the subtitle. No, let's tell the full. The full title is good reception.
Colon. They needed that in Kenya.
No. Good reception. Teens, teachers, and mobile media at Los Angeles High School.
That's right.
Very good. Okay, so let me start you off with a question. So as computers came into classroom, they would get rows of them, you know, like seven in the back of the room mm-hmm. in a good place, you know, yeah. and only two or three were broken. Most of them were out of the box, but they would have them in the back. And you'd use them when kids were done with their other work.
Right? Yeah.
It was sort of, you know, people talk about personalized learning. It was kind of the apocalyptic version of personalization where the kids are each sitting by themselves isolated in front of this screen, probably either getting remedial or advanced symbolic training.
Well, I was going to say, as a punishment, you could see putting the kid, okay, you're acting up, just go over there to the computer.
Go to the computer,
sit down, get out of my hair, and go through that playlist.
Wow, as a punishment.
Yeah, no, I've seen it.
Wow.
Seriously.
That's some bad software.
That's bad.
You got it wrong, kid. Okay. So, Antero, how's it changing? Where are we going?
So the good news is it doesn't look like that, but that's also my experience, right? So as a young person, when I was going to school, it was the Oregon Trail or Carmen San Diego, and you would go and you'd get it wasn't punishment. You'd go and get to play, you know, a few blessed minutes with to get away from the teacher, right? And plug into this other device. I don't think I actually learned anything from those games, but I remember them, right? So maybe that's a lesson. But today, I think it looks fundamentally different, and for better and worse, right? So most of the time, those devices aren't necessarily tethered to the walls, right? So if you go into a lot of classrooms today, it is netbooks and Chromebooks, and we say books in front of them as if they function in the same way as textbooks, right, or novels, but they don't. And so everybody generally kind of across SES backgrounds has access to one-to-one devices, but the landscape of what kids do with them hasn't changed that much, right? It either reinforces what we traditionally expect happens in schools, right? So instead of writing your essay on a composition notebook in front of you, you now type it on a netbook in front of you, right? You do what I did back in the day. Instead of playing the Oregon Trail, I'm going to sneak onto YouTube if it's not blocked, or try to get onto the Twitter or Facebook, right, if you have one of those accounts. So I think that's one way that things have changed.
But okay, so to me, this is a huge problem. I'm at work, and my children are supposed to be in classes learning, and I'm getting an email or a text from my child saying, what are we doing after school, or can we go pick up so-and-so after? And I'm thinking, what the heck is going on? No, because she's supposed to be learning in the classroom. So to me, there's a big worry as a parent that all this one-to-one, and let me just define one-to-one, actually, can you define one-to-one? Because I think parents may not know what that means.
Yeah, so one-to-one generally means there is one device, be it some kind of computer or mobile device, for one student, right? So every student in a classroom has one device.
Okay, so with this one-to-one, as a parent, and I've experienced this, I'm very worried about distractions, like you, sneaking onto YouTube when the teacher is expecting you to be doing something else.
Yeah, but if you were a kid, why wouldn't you go onto YouTube?
No, totally. That's my point. That's like it's way too tempting of a distraction. But as a teacher, even in my own classroom, sometimes I'm completely scintillating and fascinating. But every once in a while, I catch somebody playing a game in the middle of my class.
Yep.
That's so not okay in my eyes.
I agree.
So wait, time out. So do you say put that thing down?
Well, no. So you know what I actually now do on my syllabus, which high school teachers can't necessarily do, but college teachers can? I actually have a little note about devices that you're welcome to take notes on devices. You're welcome to use them. I encourage that. But if you're going to be playing games or checking social media or whatnot, please refrain. In fairness to the ethos of the class.
So we're going to follow up on this.
Okay.
Because I'm worried that I may have become an old fogey about this issue. But let's.
So I also have language on my syllabus for graduate students here. But I think my language might be a little different from yours. Because I just finished teaching a course for our teacher education program here. And one of the instructions my students got on the first day was sign up for Twitter. And on the first day of class, we had a Twitter chat in class. And there was frustration from some of the students who hadn't spent time on Twitter, where I had to, you know, go through some guided instruction on here's how you log on to Twitter, here's what a tweet means, right? And the reason I did that was specifically because I think a basic premise for me about what schools and learning should be about is preparing kids to be better at what happens after school. Throw out all the standards and all of that, right? But if schools are supposed to prepare kids for whatever comes after school, then that probably involves our relationships with technology. So for example, even as we're talking, my phone will occasionally buzz and beep. And as an adult, I will look at that and make a judgment on if I should respond to that, if it can wait, if I should text my partner about, you know, what are we doing for dinner, the same kind of question that you receive on your phone. Those are lessons I think we can engage in as adults.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We are speaking today with Antero Garcia, assistant professor in the Graduate School of Education here, about technology in the classroom, distractions, and teaching really self-regulation about, you know, how and when it's appropriate to use it.
Yeah, so I have a quick story on this. So there was an undergraduate who wanted to work in my research lab. And she, you know, sent me an email and we set up a time and I was talking to her. And she spoke for a while, and then she asked me a question. And as I was responding, she took out her cell phone and started responding to some texts. And I saw this, and I stopped. And it took her about 7 seconds to realize I had stopped talking. So she really was locked in. And I said to her, you know, you just asked me a question and then completely didn't listen to the answer. And she said, oh, get used to it. This is what we're like now.
Is that true? That's
yes,
a true
no, this
story?
Is true. And you know, rather than leaping across the table at her, I said, I understand. You know, that's probably not the way my lab works right now. So thank you. Goodbye.
So you did not hire her?
No.
You were not even close to it. So she had to understand that you took that as being incredibly rude and disrespectful.
No, it wasn't even that. It was that she'll never hear what my answer was. Right. But she doesn't know. I mean, it's not even if I tolerate a lot of rudeness and disrespect.
Do you really?
Yeah, I'm pretty good about it. But when people don't actually hear, they ask me something and then they don't listen to the response. So then it's sort of like, well, I don't want to work with this person because they're not listening.
OK.
But the question. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, as a parent, I just have to say this. When I have my kids do that, and this is the answer, I can listen and text at the same time.
Right. Well, that's why I counted how many seconds it took her to notice.
Mm.
Right. So I'm preparing students by having tech in the classroom so that they won't be knuckleheads in an interview. Is this
what was the question? I'm kidding. I'm sorry.
He was on his phone.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah, I get it.
Kidding.
All right.
And I'm fired. This is
he is the dean. You heard me say he's the dean.
That's right.
Of the School of Education at Terrell.
Yeah, but I don't necessarily think the preparing kids and the self-regulation. I don't know if it's about self-regulation. It's about, you know, how do we prepare kids for a better kind of civic engagement, right? So that interaction with that undergrad is a particularly good example of a student who probably hadn't gotten any kind of instruction or opportunities for reflection on what that relationship with devices and with other people should be about, right? So I think a basic premise around technology in classrooms is we invest in all of these, you know, computers that stay in a box, right, that only, you know, specially equipped professionals are allowed to touch because those pieces of technology have all of the learning and all of the fancy stuff that's going to make kids better. And that's hogwash, right? Like the stuff that will make kids better are the relationships that adults can help foster in a classroom. And if technology can help support that, then I think we get to someplace that's particularly meaningful, right? So one of the ways I can imagine when I was an English teacher, my classroom better supporting that undergrad who will go nameless. Unless you want to name that
no,
person.
No, she, no, no.
I suspect
not go
she's.
There.
I think she's probably running a company right now.
That's
so
right.
She probably wins.
But we could have supported that student through having some critical conversations about how we use mobile devices and what they mean in terms of society and better shape the infrastructure so that I don't get rear-ended by someone who's distracted as a driver, right? Because we've engaged in these conversations in schools.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We are speaking with Antero Garcia about the use of technology in the classroom.
So, Antero, you're like one of the most creative guys I have ever met. So give me a great example of something you've done with tech. And it didn't have to succeed.
Oh,
it was
okay.
It was just sort of this was a good idea, even if it didn't work.
Oh, I have a lot that don't work. In fact, most of my the sad thing is most of my book are my failures. Right? I think I'm the villain in my book, which is very disappointing. So one thing that I thought was a good idea was part of the study that the book is around is I gave all of my students iPod touches. I couldn't afford phones because of the monthly service, but turns out an iPod is the exact same thing as a phone because kids don't usually call on a phone anyways, right?
Yes.
So everyone had an iPod touch, and I assumed the best way to engage with these devices in schools was if I set up a password so that all of the kids would have the exact same software on it and I could control what happens on these phones. I essentially reinforced the traditional rule structures that happen in schools. That was my brilliant idea, and it immediately backfired, right? And I immediately failed in that the next day, all of the kids had hacked their iPods and they had Angry Birds, all of the apps were on all their phones. A student had installed a police scanner on his phone so he could listen to what was happening in the community.
Oh, that's hysterical.
Music, everything, right? Probably things I don't want to know were on those phones, right? And so the brilliant idea was I was trying to control these phones, and the students very quickly showed me that when you try to control a phone, it no longer has that same value. It's that thing that only adults are allowed to touch, right? And in this way, digitally manipulate. And once kids have some ownership over it, once they change the desktop or the sticker on their device so that it looks more like their own device, then they're willing to engage and use it in a meaningful way.
I'm totally with you.
Okay.
But how do you prevent that? So isn't it mass chaos in your classroom then?
So it could be mass chaos, right? And I probably did have some students who were texting about, hey, what are we having for dinner? Or can I go to my friend's house after school? All of that stuff could have been happening. But I think the way we avoid that is by, better centering what's valuable about school, right? I think a lot about what is happening in that ninth grade classroom before that, and a lot of it was me doing the stuff I'm supposed to, quote unquote, do as a teacher, and students, quote unquote, doing what they're supposed to do as students. But the actual meaningful and authentic learning that we expect in schools, that was largely performative and inauthentic. And I think when we get to stuff that is more engaging for kids, then we get to places where, this thing that's happening in the classroom right now, that's more important. I can text Denise later, right? That can happen after the fact. But that takes a lot more trust, and it takes a different kind of energy from what we traditionally expect to happen in schools.
So in my class, I don't have to give rules because I'm the students are so engaged, they don't want to use their one-to-one devices.
But it's also, it is about a mediation, right? So
yes.
I know
yes.
that even when I'm very engaged in my
yes.
work, if my wife needs to call me, I'm going to probably answer that call because as a professional adult, I know I can do both of those things, right? I will recognize that the idea that, our devices need to be put away during school and during social time we can use them, that's only for that kind of behavior we largely see in working class kinds of jobs, right? So if I am working at a restaurant, if I am washing dishes, if I am doing cleaning, right? Then I have that kind of policy that we see in schools. Whereas the kinds of jobs that we hope most kids aspire to, right, where you have a lot more flexibility and you have a lot more agency over your time and I can make decisions with my phones, those don't have the same kinds of policies that we expect in school. So are we training kids for specific kinds of workforce outcomes through the policies
really
that we have in schools?
So it's a social responsibility.
I think
these are those kinds of jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We will have more with Antero Garcia talking about technology in the classroom, preparing kids how to use tech in the real world, next on SiriusXM Insight 121.
You're listening to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope from the campus of Stanford University.
Welcome back to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We are talking with Antero Garcia, assistant professor in the Stanford Graduate School of Education, about distractions in the classroom. No, technology in the classroom and how we teach kids to use it.
So I think one of the powerful points that is coming out, I sort of hadn't anticipated we'd turn in this direction, is kind of the social responsibility that these devices ultimately, particularly like cell phones, are social. And maybe schools kind of have the responsibility to harness that, but also teach people kind of civil society. So here's a question for you both. I'm in class, and my cell phone buzzes once, and it's a text, I can tell.
Mm-hmm. Are you teaching the class or you're taking a class?
I'm in front of the class.
You're
I'm
teaching
talking.
The class.
I'm talking
okay.
right now.
Okay.
And 5 seconds later, it buzzes again. And this keeps going, let's say, every 10 seconds it buzzes. At which point, how do I proceed? So is my first step surreptitiously take it out of my pocket and see who it is?
Mm-hmm.
Or at 3 buzzes, I know this must be an emergency and I excuse myself from the room. So what is your threshold for allowing disruption from the device in your own teaching?
In my own teaching. Well, so and maybe I'm a really bad mom. I put my phone in my purse. I tell my kids, you know, for the next 3 hours, I'm basically not reachable. and so I wouldn't even hear the buzz. Now, I was doing a workshop the other day where my phone was blowing up and I didn't wear a watch and there was no clock in the classroom. So my phone was my clock and I saw my phone blowing up and I saw it was something about my father-in-law and emergency surgery. And I didn't pick up because I had 100 people looking at me. And I think that audience would have thought it was really rude. And I kind of saw that other people had, you know, it kept blowing up. So I'm seeing, okay, someone's handling this. And then right after I got on the phone. So for me, it's really not,
So teaching is not real life. It's more, you're on the stage. You don't interrupt the show.
Sage on the stage? Is this,
Denise. I am definitely not a sage on the stage, but I definitely, now I will say this. I did when they went into group work. So this is a good point by you. When they ran into group work, I started to read the texts to find out, and then I realized, okay, they had it handled.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is a good reason just to do group work right then and there. It allows you the ability to check the emergency on your phone.
So Antero, you would take this as an opportunity to teach the class.
Yeah, I think this is I think it's a pedagogical moment, but I also think the context shifts, right? So if we were in a high school classroom and I feel my phone is buzzing and it seems like with increasing urgency from somebody, hopefully by the time that's happened, hopefully it's not on the first day of school or the first week of school, and we've had time to build up a trusting relationship between the students and the teacher, so I can let my students know, you know what, I'm getting a lot of text messages, I need to check on what's going on, because hopefully I've built up a kind of relationship where that's okay with my students, and if the same thing were to happen to my students, I could trust them as well to do the same kind of check-in quickly and come back to, you know, the central purpose of what's happening in a classroom.
So what do you do if they're playing games? If it's not like this emergency thing, what if they're fooling around?
Definitely happens. Yeah. And I, as a qualitative study, I would code, you know, the number of times that students were distracted in my classroom. And it was a humbling amount, right, to reflect on my own practice of how many times students were distracted that I was able to notice. And I think part of that comes to...
Time out. So if... The alternative is a big lecture hall class and you're not distracted. You're just zoning out because it's so dull. So being distracted is not so bad. Being distracted is like it's at least it's competing with you.
It's keeping you awake.
Context matters, right? I'd rather be distracted in lecture hall than when you're driving behind me.
Very good.
I think, yeah.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We're speaking with Antero Garcia about technology in the classroom.
Anyway, I was just trying to... bolster you. I think distraction's not so bad. If they're zoning out, that's bad.
But. That's right. I will take distraction over zoning out, right? But I'd also take full engagement over both of those, right? And to me, that comes down to you're not going to get the full engagement from the phone, right? Because if you have some crappy game that some educational tech company has developed for kids, I guarantee there's a better game that doesn't have direct educational principles developed into it, right? Or there's a more interesting YouTube video that's going viral, right? Or there's a friend's tweet. All of those things are always going to be more interesting than what a bunch of adults assumed kids would like, right? So we need to reflect on whose principles and whose values and whose ideas are centered in classroom conversations, right? Is it the technology that somebody else made, or is it the ways that we weave relationships and student interests into what happens in classrooms?
I think it's really hard. What you're saying, I totally get what you're saying. As a teacher, I think it's really hard to give that kind of control up.
Yeah.
I love the idea that the kids should have a say, but I think we'd have to spend a lot of time on setting norms in the beginning and saying, you're going to have your phone and I'm going to trust you. But then you've got to have something that says, if you break that trust, you lose the phone.
Oh, interesting. I was going to go a different.
Which way were you going to go?
I was just imagining sort of kids working independently, but they're really sort of all playing around, and suddenly they found each other, and it's getting a little chaotic. My move wouldn't be to take away the phone. My move would be the standard teacher, kids sitting at separate desks. I would say, "All right, pop quiz."
Oh God.
Right, and everybody has to put it down.
I guess both of those examples reinforce what traditional school has looked like for the past century, right? So that's what we do, right? But school isn't what the business world looks like anymore, right? So if mobile devices are social, we treat them like they're not social.
What age do we start? So parents ask me all the time about cell phones and their kids. You're thinking, start a puberty.
Start in the womb. Yeah, you got to
start in the womb.
So 2-year-olds on iPad, you see that all the time in restaurants, 2-year-olds, everything. Are you saying we need to build? I just want to get a grasp of what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like the fuddy-duddy, but Dan's even more fuddy-duddy, I think, because he's just going to give a pop quiz. I'm going to at least try to talk to him. I'm kidding, Dan. What would you say the ideal classroom should just have everybody is doing their thing, you set up these really interesting, engaging activities, but they're allowed to be on their phone. Mm-hmm. If they're not really into it, you're okay with them watching YouTube. We have like a 1-minute wrap up here.
Yeah, I'm not okay with that. I will say I don't know the right age. And I can say comfortably as someone who doesn't have kids yet, I feel uncomfortable when I'm in the restaurant and the parents have just planted the iPad in front of the kids and it babysits them instead of engaging them in the dinner table conversation that I think is an important socializing process. So I think that's one piece. What I think is important is not about what the device as an alternative, but is the device a part of the infrastructure of how people relate to one another, right? And so I know my relationships with people outside of this conversation right now are mediated through mobile devices, right? I'm able to have those conversations. And so we should reinforce that with what we do in schools. But we should also reinforce that people should be able to have a non-distracted conversation that's engaging and that is two-way, right? It's not an adult just dumping a bunch of information onto a student and expecting them to share that out, right? There should be some kind of exchange, and I think that's kind of what we need to be rethinking about what happens in schools now.
So it's interesting. It used to be video games. Now it is the realization of just how social technology is and all the norms and everything that comes with it. It's really interesting.
Exciting and scary at the same time. Thank you for listening to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We're on the campus of Stanford University and on Sirius XM Insight 121.